Hi, fam. This is Shireen from Ethnically Ambiguous. We're here with a really special guest. I'm interviewing her and talking about her life and her career. She just made a film called Unlovable. It's her first time as a filmmaker making a feature film, and so it's really amazing.
Hi, I'm Charlene de Guzman.
She's truly amazing. It's a really good episode. It gets really intimate, and I really recommend it, so stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
And we're here. Okay, so this is the first installment of this thing that Anna and I are trying out. This is Shireen for Ethnically Ambiguous, by the way. We're doing this thing where we interview guests solo and drop them as bonus episodes. And I thought the first person I thought of that I wanted to do this with was the current guest that we have on. And she's sitting right next to me, so it's like I don't want to talk about her in not third person, but like I don't want to talk about her when she's sitting right in front of me. But it's Charlene
De Guzman.
I should have asked you that. I prefer guests introducing themselves because I already hate messing up names anyway, but I should have done that. But hi.
Hi.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I've known about you for a while because you're hilarious on Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
You're very, very funny. And you've done some like viral videos. You had like one about cell phones, mm-hmm. about how we were like sucked into our cell phones at all times, and that went like around the internets a couple years ago. But you've been doing other things, namely a movie that I saw in theaters, luckily enough, a couple weeks ago called Unlovable. Mm-hmm. And it's a really personal movie for you.
Yes.
And it's your first movie.
Yes.
Yeah. So even though you've made like little videos here and there, this is a lot different.
Yeah, this was a big deal for me. This is a first everything, I feel like.
But before we get into the movie, I want to get to know you. And I want our listeners, to know who you are. Because I think the fact that you're a woman and the fact that you're a minority is also a huge deal. Because it's, you don't hear stories like this, let alone stories like this from a minority.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into you and where you grew up and maybe where your parents are from.
Yeah, I was born and raised in San Jose, California, mm-hmm. the Bay Area. And my parents immigrated there from the Philippines. And I have two older brothers. They're a lot older than me. My parents were 40 when they had me. I was surprise. And so I was there until I graduated high school.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of maybe were raised as like an only child.
It felt like that at some point because my brothers left right after high school as well.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Were you close to your parents?
Not really. I mean, I feel like my family... Well, now, looking back on it, generally kind of cold and avoidant, mm-hmm. and no one really talked about anything. And so I kind of always felt like an outsider in the sense that I always wanted to talk about things. I had a lot of feelings. I was very sensitive.
Yeah.
I always wanted to talk, and nobody really talked about anything.
Yeah. I think a lot of immigrant households are like that. Mm-hmm. They're very... because I relate to that a lot, too. I think emotions aren't very, prioritized. Mm-hmm. You know, no one asks you how you feel.
Right, yeah, because it's we don't talk about it. Yeah. We just don't talk about it.
It's a lot about, appearances and stuff.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Well, when you were growing up, did you know that you wanted to go into the creative field?
Yeah, so I was a competitive dancer all throughout my childhood. So that was, my main thing.
What kind of dance?
Ballet, tap, jazz.
Dude, that's amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah. So tap was my favorite. And I played the piano. I eventually started playing drums in the sixth grade. And I always loved writing, mm-hmm. especially creative writing. I would write stories when I was young. They were bad, but I loved doing it.
I think when you're the emotional kid growing up in your family, you learn to have an outlet that can be like a catharsis for you. And for me, that was also writing and poetry and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it became filmmaking and like photography and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But I think it really is interesting that we use that creativity almost like a therapy. Would you agree with that? Like, it's...
Yeah. Because I believe we are creative beings. I feel like everybody's here with creativity and it's meant to be expressed. And I feel like tapping into that, especially when you feel like an only child or that nobody else is around to talk to you, it's a really nice place to land.
Yeah. And not only, like, did you feel probably like the only child, but you didn't have any sisters and stuff. Were you close with your mom at all? Did she, like, tell you about, I don't know, woman things?
Not really. Maybe a little bit, but not really. But my brothers both influenced me very much in terms of the creativity, because my eldest brother is an artist and photographer and paints and introduced me to artists and would, you know, take me to museums and stuff like that. And then my other brother is a DJ and like he influenced me a lot with music, because I remember when he was listening to hip-hop, I was listening to hip-hop, and then when he started getting into like alternative rock, like, you know, he would give me his tapes and stuff.
That's really,
like,
really cool.
Yeah, it's really
cool.
Were your
parents supportive of their career choices?
What's really cool is that like they are very supportive. They were very supportive. Like, I look back on that now and I'm like, wow, I was really lucky that they were always so supportive. And like, even me with my dance, like taking me to the dance class, paying for all the costumes, like super supportive. And even like later on in life pursuing these things, like always like down with it.
What did your parents do growing up?
So it's interesting because my dad is... Well, he passed away in 2006, but he was super religious. Like, we grew up Catholic, but he was, like, a very prominent, like, Filipino religious speaker and, like, would do lead Bible groups and, like, speak at retreats and stuff. But then he had, like, at some point he had, like, three jobs and they were just, like, different things. He was a welder. Sometimes he was like a security guard, like in the graveyard shift, like all these different jobs. And my mom was like an electrician, to my knowledge. I remember growing up and not really understanding what either of my parents did, but they did work a lot.
I think the immigrant lifestyle is like hustle, you know,
because it's like, that's how, like, now when I look back on it, it's like that was how they showed their love. Like, no, they didn't like hug me or tell me I love you or ask me, you know, personal questions about my day, but like they've provided as best as they could, and if that meant getting three jobs so that they could pay for my dance costumes, that's what that meant, you know.
It's really you see it in a different perspective when you grow up and you're like, oh, they spent all this time to work their butts off so I could be happy for like a half hour or whatever time, however long the class was. It's really humbling. So what drove you to make... So you started making YouTube videos a while ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. What propelled you to start doing that?
Somebody told me that I should consider it. Actually, Marvin Lemus was the first. He directed my very first YouTube video I ever did. And if you look it up, it's just like, it looks like my first video. I think it was like in 2012.
Yeah.
Maybe even sooner than that. But he was like, have you ever thought about taking one of your tweets and like filming a video about it? And I hadn't done that. So he helped me with my first video.
What was the tweet?
I'm going to mess this up, but it was like basically oversharing this thing, and then in the end you find out she's talking to a pizza delivery guy because he says, I got to go, but
yeah. I like that. But then, okay, so let's go back a little bit. How did you really get known on Twitter? Like, what, you just like just were funny and people like latched on to that?
I was starting to try to, you know, be more honest and kind of be funny on Twitter, just because there was like some guy that I was trying to impress, honestly, when I look back on that. Some unavailable guy that I was trying to impress. And
was he like a Twitter person?
He was a Twitter person. Uh-huh. I'll say that much. And eventually, what really started to get me attention is because I went to a screening of a friend, and Patton Oswalt was there mm-hmm. at the screening, and I went up to him, I think, and I told him that he had just tweeted something about Stomp, and I was in Stomp. And so I told him, like, oh, my God, everybody in Stomp loved that tweet. I sent it to everyone. And then I found him on Twitter, and then, like, he went through my Twitter and started, like, retweeting things. Uh-huh. And I only had, like, a few hundred followers at that time.
Yeah.
But that would start, like, Patton Oswalt is, like, such a – I like saying, like, a fairy godfather in the sense that, like, he started retweeting my tweets. He started retweeting all the videos I made.
Yeah.
Like, he's been so supportive. Like, now
he
was, you know, he donated to my film and was an associate producer. So
yeah, I saw that in the credits. That's
yeah,
really cool.
He's, like, he's been a homie for a while.
I've heard really good things about him.
He's
I'm glad that
nice
he lives up to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I want to get a little personal.
Mm-hmm.
And so the film, Unlovable,
mm-hmm.
it's about sex and love addiction.
Yeah.
How, growing up, do you look back and realize, like, maybe the way you were raised or, like, the way you handled emotion, did that influence you eventually coming to terms with this part of your life?
Oh, absolutely. I think a big part of recovery and healing is getting into your childhood and
mm-hmm.
seeing all the things that really fucked you up.
Yeah.
I now, before, there used to be so much shame and everything, and now I look back and I can honestly say, like, wow, I was doomed to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be weird if I was any other way.
Can you explain to me what you mean by that a little bit? Like, maybe explain to our listeners, like, what, in your mind, like, what is sex and love addiction for you? And how you came to realize, like, your habits eventually, like, led to this?
So I think a lot of people have an idea of what sex addiction
mm-hmm.
is, and what I'm trying to bring awareness to through my film and what I share is that sex and love addiction is a little different than that, and it involves unhealthy relationship patterns, dependency issues, attachment issues. For me, it was pursuing emotionally unavailable people
mm-hmm.
And unconsciously doing that because I already hated myself and didn't love myself and thought I was unlovable and broken. And it's like I unconsciously pursued these people that would validate that so I can say, see, I told you. See, I told you all men suck. See, I told
mm-hmm.
you I'm unlovable. And so for me, the sex part came in of, like, I thought that was all I was worth and that was my only value. So that kind of became a tool into, like, getting these crumbs from these guys who didn't like me back or these guys who were, you know, emotionally unavailable or
mm-hmm.
cold or avoidant or whatever. But in my upbringing, and this is very common in terms of, like, having some kind of childhood trauma, I have different kinds of sexual trauma from my childhood, but a big part of it, too, was also the fact that my dad was probably a sex addict. I grew up in a house where the garage was collaged with centerfolds from, like, Playboy and Penthouse, like, top to bottom, left to right, collaged with naked women everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He'd frame centerfolds and put them in our bathrooms. They'd be in the closets. He'd switch them out. It was very unwell. And it was not talked about because it's like here's this religious guy that people look up to, but there's this like dark secret that is just like a normal thing. Like
right.
I didn't even realize this was weird or a part of my life till my mid-20s when I was talking about it with a boyfriend and he was like, you know, that's weird, right? Because you just don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you're born into it, so it seems normal. And so my dad was like just kind of obsessed with women. He'd point out women on the TV. I'd see him checking out women all the time in front of my mom. It was always this thing.
Mm-hmm.
If there were women anywhere, he'd be pointing them out, talking about them, whatever. And so I learned – I had that story that I carried from a very young age that that's what a woman, an ideal woman is. If my dad loves those women, then that's what a woman is. My dad also watched a lot of porn. There were no boundaries about that. We would all go to the video store. He would get porn. It was just like a normal thing of like, dad's getting porn. I'd go with my mom to the video store. We'd go get porn from my dad. Wow. I'd bring porn to my dad. You know, there were no boundaries. And so when I was little, I started watching my dad's porn whenever I was home alone. And that became a thing. And I would eventually learn from a therapist that, you know, seeing those hardcore images at such a young age is very damaging and traumatic to the brain as your brain is just starting to form. And so it really, you know, sets your path for the rest of your mm-hmm. life. It was very healing for me to, you know, get into recovery and meet other people who have such a similar story of being exposed to porn at a young age, and it's how damaging that is. And so
yeah.
I feel like I really hope to bring awareness to that also yeah. of like how damaging it is for children to be looking at porn.
Yeah, because in the movie, your parents in that who play you, the mm-hmm. your character's parents, also the dad was mm-hmm. very similar to what you just said. I was yes. going to ask how similar that was to you, but mm-hmm. How old are you? So it's interesting to me that it wasn't talked about, and that was probably your first insight into what sex is, but yeah. like it was never talked about with you, like what sex was, like your body maturing or like any of that stuff.
Honestly, the first time my mom kind of talked about it, she just said, don't have sex because I'll be able to tell you're having it by the way you walk. Oh. And at that point, I had already been having sex.
Yeah. Can I ask when you lost your virginity?
When I was 14.
Actually, I want to rephrase that. I hate the phrase lost your virginity.
I know,
when
right?
When you start having sex. You don't lose anything. It's not something to be lost. When you were 13?
14.
14. And I also wanted to, like, how did your mom, what did she just, like, act like business as usual when it came to, like, getting porn for your dad or, like, the centerfolds in the garage? Yeah. Like, she didn't even seem like she was bothered by it?
Not at all. And that's why, I mean, of course, I've had been years of therapy, like, figure out these mom resentments I have.
Yeah.
But it's like the compassion comes in for me when I realize how unwell you have to be to actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, on my dad's side, but on my mom's side as well. Because then even in my early 20s, when I started realizing these things, my therapist at the time, like, my mom was visiting and, like, she was like, maybe you should bring this stuff up with her. And it took so much courage to do it. And I'm, like, telling her all this stuff and how it's affected my life. And, like, I'm, like, crying. And then she, like, again, coming from a family that doesn't talk about mm-hmm. anything, so this is probably so crazy yeah. for her. She, like, is like a deer in headlights. She freezes for a few seconds. And then she goes, I was strong and confident, and, like, that stuff didn't bother me. I don't know how you ended up the way you did. That's what she said to me.
Wow.
So that's, like, this is like, the work that I'm doing of, like,
yeah.
reprogramming after, like, you know, that kind of dynamic.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Totally.
So, like, when you think again of
it's
how...
It's even worse than your movie.
Yeah, it is. That's what I like to joke around with people of, like, oh, it's, like, actually worse. I was yeah. being very nice in the movie. But, like, how that, like, you know, paved out in my life was, like, that relationship with my parents. And then when you think about my mom, like, love addiction, you know, the core of that is like a, they call it a mother hunger. And so when you're constantly in that longing for love and to be seen and, you know, intimacy, you're probably unconsciously pursuing men that are kind of the same way. And that's yeah. what happened for me.
Yeah, to be completely honest, like, I really related to your movie. And then this is, like, I have never told this on the podcast, but the reason why I even heard about her screening for Unlovable was because I'm on an email, because a couple years ago I took a test, like, online, like if I have sex and love addiction, because I also have pursued very unavailable men emotionally. I often, like, everything you said about feeling validated, like, as a with your body and everything, like, it really resonates with me. And I also wanted you to be on the podcast because people hear sex and love addiction and they just think, like, oh, you just want to have sex all the time, you're yeah. always horny, you're mm-hmm. but that's not what it's about. It's about an unhealthy attachment habit, and
yeah.
and I really, really related to that. And so I took this test online for this It's called the Center of Healthy Sex, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I've been on their email ever since. And then you popped up in the email being like, free screening for this movie. And I was like, fuck yeah. Because like, I heard about it this whole time. And I really want to see it in a theater because I just think it's a better experience. But I'm so glad I went because it's so rare to see something talked about in a way that is like, not only... Like, I feel like a lot of sex addiction is also from a male point of view. Like, David Duchovny had a series about it.
And they're always, like, caught. They're caught cheating.
Yeah. Like, Michael Fassbender was in a movie called Shame about sex and love addiction.
That was intense.
I mean, they're all very intense, male-dominated perspectives. And so the fact that it's you, like a young Filipino woman talking about this very serious thing that a lot of people... I think a lot of people... have these tendencies but aren't willing to admit it.
Sure.
Or aren't willing to admit that it's something that they could work on. Mm-hmm. It's just like, relationship sucks, dating sucks, but really, like, you fall into these habits because maybe you were raised in a way that isn't healthy, or you just never really understood how to form healthy emotional bonds. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for me. But yeah, I just really appreciated your movie for that reason. Because I'm sure you can relate to this too, but like, I didn't grow up seeing myself on television. Right. You know, we didn't grow up seeing, like, as minority women, like, you don't see yourself like as a comic or as like a director or anything. And so it's just inspiring to see something that's talked about not only from you, but also just talked about.
Yeah.
You know? So that, I hope you appreciate it. I really appreciate it. And I hope that you understand like how monumental it is that you made this movie.
Aww, you know, thank you. That means a lot.
It's inspiring to watch. It was. I truly recommend everyone go see it. Is it on? It's on video on demand right now.
Yeah, it's on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, all of the streaming services.
Okay, I want to get back into more talk with you after a quick commercial break. Okay, and we're back with Charlene. Okay, I want to talk to you about making the actual film. So I'm also a filmmaker, and in a film I made a couple years ago, I was acting in it and directing it and producing it. And it's doing all those roles is really hard. Mm-hmm. And I was only able to do it because I really trusted my DP, my cinematographer. So I wanted to ask how you came to work with Susie Younessi how did you decide, I want her to direct me in this? Because not only, well, a better question is, were you always planning on playing yourself in this? Not yourself, but playing the lead role in this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the story of how it all got made is pretty miraculous because it started with a DM on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And it's a good DM. In 2013, Mark Duplass of the Duplass Brothers started following me on Twitter, and I freaked out and I sent him a DM and I said, oh my God, you're one of my heroes. Thanks for following me. And he wrote back, if you have anything you've written, send it over. And I didn't have anything at the time. And it was a year later, because I had started recovery from sex and love addiction, that I wrote a pilot based on my experiences. Because what was getting me through my recovery was tapping into my creativity, mm-hmm. finding out what I like to do, what I'm passionate about. And so writing was really helping. And so I sent him the pilot. And then the next day he said, I want to meet you and I want to make a movie. And so we decided that we definitely wanted a female director. Mm-hmm. He introduced me to one of his favorite producers, Jen Roskin. And then when I started working with her, we first linked up with Sarah Adina Smith, who helped me put together the script.
And she's an amazing filmmaker in her own right. Like Buster's Malheart and
The Midnight Swim.
Yeah. She's phenomenal.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
And she actually introduced me to Susie.
Mm-hmm.
Because we definitely have the same aesthetic and kind of kawaii, like bright, colorful, stuffed animal mm-hmm. kind of like aesthetic that we both really wanted to put onto my story, because we both decided we really wanted to portray this in a light, colorful way and not get dark and miserable.
like the majority of stories. Yeah. Yeah, it's not like Michael Fassbender, like, yes, walking slow through a hallway or something.
Gosh.
always naked, by the way, in that movie. So you mentioned this, you wrote it into when you were in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
When did you realize that you had something that needed to be addressed as far as like, oh, I need to be in recovery for this?
Well, the first hint of it was in 2011, because I had a friend who was in a 12-step program for sex and love addiction, and he was like, have you heard of sex and love addiction? Because at that point, I was in a relationship that I could not get out of, and we were like breaking up and getting back together all the time and completely codependent. And on top of that, I was like in quote love with some musician in another state who was married but going through a divorce and had a girlfriend. And so I'm like talking about all this crazy shit all the time, always like texting about these crazy shit. And he's like, have you heard of this thing? And like I went and I like took the test online and all the stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is me.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even think of anything of it. Of like, I was just like so detached from it. I was like, oh, yeah, this is a thing.
Yeah.
I have. Whatever. But I tried like a few meetings. I thought they were stupid. I thought everyone was like crazy. I was just like, what's the big deal? We're fine. I don't know what you guys are complaining about. And it wasn't until 3 years later, being in another awful relationship with a very unavailable person, it was just so painful. I thought maybe, you know, not looking at the fact that I had been pursuing this very unavailable person who made it very clear in the beginning that he didn't want anything serious and he probably didn't even really like me back. I thought it was just me and I could go back to these meetings and I could fix this and it would save the relationship. So it was actually trying to save a relationship that got me back into the program. But I look back on it now and I'm like, whatever worked. And I think that would be the only thing that would have gotten me in.
Because of this addiction, because of this like need for validation. Exactly. That's crazy.
And so I did it for a few months and I actually went like no contact with him for a month. I saw him again. He actually broke up with me. I continued the program. I was getting better. I was getting better. I was getting better. And then I went back to him.
Because was in the back of your mind, was your goal still to get him back?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so then
that's a huge red flag right there, right?
yeah, it really is. and then we got back, like we saw each other. I hooked up with him for 3 days and then he like disappeared again.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think because I had some recovery under my belt, it hurt so bad. And I like really went crazy. And at some point, like it'd been days since I heard from him. And I'm like pacing around my apartment, freaking out, 7 hours, not showing up to anything, and like planning how to kill myself. Because I thought I was crazy. I couldn't believe I was here again. I couldn't believe that I even like tried to help myself and like nothing happened and I was here again. And it hurt so bad I just wanted to die. And I was like trying to figure out how to kill myself. Like I was really ready to do it. I didn't even have like a knife in my kitchen. I was so broke. Like it was like dull. I was trying to like cut myself and it was so dull. It didn't cut anything. I didn't have any pills to take. I didn't know how to like, you know, did I have anything that tie around my neck? Like the last thing I said out loud was, where do I even find a bridge? And then I get a call and I see his name and I see his picture, and just seeing that he was calling back, I felt all the pain that I had been feeling for days just dissipate from my body immediately, like a drug.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even answer the phone because I was so tripped out being able to actually see what was happening. And I said out loud, oh, this is how I know I'm sick. And so it wasn't until that moment, and that was January 2015, that I really cut it off with him. And then I took it all very seriously. And that was the same month that I eventually met Mark Duplass. So it kind of all worked out because I just like moved that energy into this project.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And that was, so a year prior to that, you had he had asked you if you had anything to write?
Yeah, a year before that.
Wow. And you, but before, the style of your comedy, I would say on Twitter anyway, is very honest. Mm-hmm. So were you already talking about being a sex and love addict on Twitter as before that happened, or were you still like more like I'm not ready to share this part of myself yet?
Yeah, I don't think I actually like even use the term that I'm a sex and love addict. I think that was in like February of 2016, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was 2015. Actually, I don't know. Yeah. I was ready for it.
So, because I feel like a big part of your style is this like very like arresting honesty.
Yeah.
So was it ever something that you were like not ready to talk about?
No, I think I was like always ready. Mm-hmm. Going back to my childhood, like I was always this way because even like with AOL and stuff, mm-hmm. like in middle school, I had this like e-zine. So like the zine that you could subscribe to, and like it was, I had like thousands of subscribers, and like it won a bunch of like online awards and mm-hmm. stuff. It was featured in like a few like catalogs and stuff, but it was, I was already talking about being depressed then. I was talking about how, I had a cutting problem starting in middle school, and I talked about that. I already had an advice column then. Like, so it was like I was always very willing to talk about real stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate that because I can also – I'm getting better at talking about that stuff too, but it's very helpful to other people that feel like they're alone because mm-hmm. the worst parts of, like, mental illnesses, like, whether it's depression or an addiction, like sex and love addiction, is you feel like you're the only one.
Yeah.
And so hearing someone talk about it so openly is so helpful, and I – learned that firsthand because I was very like I would censor myself a lot on my podcast in the past because I was afraid of my family listening and my dad, and like my parents are like, it's almost like a double life that I live. Yeah. And so but the minute I was honest about it, and especially on when I would guest on other podcasts, I would find myself being so much more honest when I would be a guest on other people's podcasts, and I talked about my experiences with intimacy and things that like I thought made me completely fucking weird. Mm-hmm. And then you would get messages that like, oh, thank you for saying these things. I thought I was the only one. And I was like, oh, this is why it's important. Yeah. You know, like to make someone feel less alone is like the least I can fucking do as like someone with any type of platform. Yeah. So that's what I really strive to do as a filmmaker. And I think I feel like that's what you do too, just to make people feel less alone.
And I feel like that's like the cherry on top of the fact that like living in truth kind of just, it's just a freedom that mm-hmm. I've just, such a high level of freedom. And I love that it's kind of infinite and keeps going, because even, it wasn't until very recently too that like my family watched the film, and I was so terrified of that for so long. Like they know everything, and it was all very weird for me to even mm-hmm. tell them about stuff. But, like, the movie, I was so scared of, like, what my mom would think and all this stuff. But to get that over with, and she was, like, proud of me. Oh, like, wow. She didn't say anything about any of the dark parts of it, which I could still feel my little girl in me kind of, like, hoping that someone in my family acknowledges these things that happened. But I'm letting it go, and, like, I'm focusing on the good. And, like, she was, like, proud of me mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And I just, like, after I got those texts from her, I, like, had this big cry, because you don't even realize how much you're holding on to until you let go of it. But it was so exhausting to try to have to tiptoe around my family. Yeah. And to have that just kind of, like, done with, and it's just, like, it's all out there now.
It's a huge emotional burden that I don't think is even acknowledged, because you're just, like, oh, this is the way I have to live.
Yeah. You know? Oh, it's such a burden.
I did want to maybe touch a little bit on, like, do you think the way your father was, do you think mm-hmm. that influenced the rest of your siblings too? Like, have you guys talked about it with each other? Like,
so nobody's talked about any of that stuff.
Your brothers have. I've
brought it up, and people, they were just kind of upset that I brought it up.
Oh wow.
So that's where we're at with that. But and it hasn't been brought up since. And but I definitely think it's affected them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I can have my judgments and opinions from what I see from the outside, and I know those are just, like, judgments, but, like, if I had to guess, like, I think it definitely had an effect.
Yeah, it's just, I hope one day you guys could talk about it openly. Me too. Because that would be so therapeutic, like, just, you know, and and helpful.
I'm waiting for the day.
Yeah. Putting it out there.
Putting it out there.
I really, really loved John Hawkes in this movie. Yeah. He's just, I love him in everything.
I love him too.
But his portrayal of his character was so raw and authentic, and I really, really liked that. What was it like? And he's a very amazing musician.
Yes.
What was it like playing drums with him?
It was awesome because he loves music first more than anything, mm-hmm. and that's why it was really cool that he even agreed to do the movie. We were really scared that he wouldn't want to, but like we told him we need somebody to write original songs, and that's what really attracted him.
Did you know him before?
No, but Susie did, mm-hmm. And that was our in. And but you know, we started meeting up to start rehearsing and writing the music a couple of months, maybe even more, before shooting, and so it was cool to get to know him and build this friendship and bond over working on the music together. Because mm-hmm. even like working on it, rehearsing it, then recording it, you know, before this movie, I mean, I'm not a singer and I don't sing. And so I remember, you know, I have one song that I sing in the movie, which was horrifying. But when we first did it, like, I remember being so scared because I'm just like, okay, now my first time ever singing for a person is for John Hawkes, one of my favorite actors of all time. And I'm at his house and I'm singing this song. And I remember after I was done, he, like, came over and, like, hugged me and was, like, crying because it was just, like, such an intimate moment. Yeah. And so we had that foundation of kind of this really cool bond over music going into the film. And I feel mm-hmm. like you kind of can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the people that haven't seen the movie, I feel like you made music the creative outlet for your character.
Yeah.
And I really loved how much of a role, because I love music and I love that it plays such a big role in that. And the original songs are fucking great. Mm-hmm. Like, they're really fucking good.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciated that it wasn't just a, like, she wrote songs and was better. It was like there were songs that you guys played together, you know? Like, it feels real.
Yeah.
And I really like that. Do you feel like on set, or I feel like, do you ever feel pressure to not have to speak for everyone that's dealing with this? Like, do you ever feel like this is my experience and mine alone, and I don't want to have to speak for everyone with love addiction? Or like, do you feel like it's almost like people, now that you've made this movie, people are asking you all these questions about it, and you are the sole person they want to ask these questions
to? Yeah, I'm happy to play that role mm-hmm. because I think that's really what I signed up for and what I intended. Because like, when I got into recovery, what really blew my mind, like meeting all the people in the meetings, is just like, oh my gosh, like we're all going through this thing. We all have different stories, but they're similar. Like we're all out there walking out there. Like there's this many people in this room right now, like all walks of life. Like who's out there in the world that's also feeling this? It's like I immediately was just like, I need to bring awareness to this because people gotta know. Yeah. And so even like looking it up, there weren't that many, if any, people talking about it. Like I actually was just really – I admired Alanis Morissette because at the time she was saying a lot of things about mm-hmm. love addiction. And I was like, we gotta have more people talking about mm-hmm. this. So I was like, well – I'll happily be that person if no one else is going to step up.
I mean, someone has to, right? Yeah. I mean, hopefully it'll be the first of many things, you know? It'll inspire other people to be like, I want to tell my story too.
Yes, that's what I hope for.
Yeah. Did you ever, was there ever a part in the movie or like when you were writing this that you were like, I can't include this, and then you ended up changing your mind? Or like, was there anything that was something that scared you?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of stuff that scared me, but you know, a year after shooting, we did like additional photography to like help the story. And Joy's share about her dad, that wasn't there before. And we realized before in the early cuts of like.
Can you explain that a little bit more for people that haven't?
So there's a part where the lead character, Joy, she finally shares in the 12-step meeting and she kind of tells a little bit about her story, which is a little bit of my story about, you know, my dad and all the porn and stuff. And we didn't have that in there, which is crazy to think about now. But because I think before I was scared to do that. And also we were having a problem with like the test screenings that we were doing. People were having a hard time empathizing with her. Like, why should I care about this girl who is just like fucking up her life and having sex with a bunch of dudes? Like, why do I care? And now looking back on it too, it's just like that was such an important thing to add, because it's like everybody has a reason why they're acting like that. Mm-hmm. And like, so that part being added, I think definitely helps you root for her a little more.
100%. I can't believe that was added a year later. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a really good call. And it was like very intimate for you because that's your life.
Yeah.
That's like your dad.
Yeah. It was so, I mean, a lot of the movie was hard sometimes to do, but just like that too, of like having to shoot that over and over and over again, of doing that share over and over and over again as if I'm doing it for the first time. Like it was like people were like crying on set because it was just like, it was a lot.
And I'm sure it was terrifying when your mom eventually saw it too, because that's
still yet to know what she thought about it, but I know she saw it.
That's crazy.
Where you at, mom? Putting that out there.
Come on the podcast. Come be on my podcast. Let's talk about it. We're gonna get more into it after a quick commercial break. Okay, we're back. I want to cap off this interview thing with you, like now that you've done this project and you've made a film, that's like a huge deal. Are you in the works on another one?
I'm actually about to direct something for the first time, so
that's
I'm
amazing.
Really excited about that. I can't say much about it yet, but it'll be my first time directing, so I'm scared and excited at the same time. And I'm trying to finish my book because I've been working on it for years.
You're working on a book?
Yeah.
Like a...
It's a memoir. So it goes really well with Unlovable, actually, because it really gets in there. But it's been this process for a really long time that it's been kind of hard for me to even finish it because it's so hard to go there.
It really is.
So I've been really gentle and easy with myself of like, you know, when it's done, it'll be done.
Yeah, I think it takes time for sure.
Yeah,
it's not good to rush it.
But I want to keep making movies, and I have like, you know, a long to do list of things that I want to do.
Was it strange being on set and like seeing? Because for me, the most validating and like self affirming thing, like, oh, I want to make films, was like seeing the things that I had dreamt up in my head like brought to life in front of me, like physically manifested.
Yeah.
There's like no feeling that I can replace with that.
Yeah. There was one day I was driving to set and I just started crying because, like, gratitude of, like, how the hell did I get here? Like, it wasn't that long ago that I was, like, I thought I was going to die in recovery. I was having such a hard time and I didn't think I'd make it. And, like, now I'm making a movie? Like, how did this happen? Like, it was so mind-blowing the entire time.
Yeah.
To this day, it's still mind-blowing.
It's really phenomenal. I mean, it's a crazy story. Like,
it's crazy.
A big part of your life was, like, Twitter. And, like,
I know.
Like whether there was Patton Oswalt or, like DMing Mark Duplass.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, these little things, these little actions that you probably didn't even realize looking back on it, like, would totally put your life in a direction that you couldn't stop.
Yeah, and it's more proof of, like, everything has a purpose and it's all, like, guiding you on your path.
Yeah.
Because, like, to this day, I still can't believe how did I make a movie? You know, I get messages from people almost every day of, like, how they connected with the film or, like, how they realize they're a sex and love addict, how now they're going to meetings, how, you know, I get so many great emails, but I once had an email from a dad that said that he was going to take down the centerfolds from his garage. And that just, I cried because I was like, if I could even help one little girl, you know, with that specifically, it's like, then all of it is worth it. I wouldn't change anything because if I can get, you know, that, if that's happening, then yes.
That's, I feel like I could cry just hearing that.
Yeah.
That's like, that's amazing.
It is. That one really, really touched me in a way of like, oh, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has since being in recovery, how many years have you been in recovery at this point?
Well, I went into that first meeting after that relationship in 2014. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's been almost 4 years. No, 4 years. Wait, am I math bad? 5 years? It's no, 4 years.
4 years, 4 years. It's almost five. It's almost 2019. We're almost done with a shit year. Yeah. Has your relationship with yourself, and I'm sure since making this movie as well, like, has it gotten easier to connect with people on a real level? Or, like, do you still find yourself with going into these bad habits?
Oh, it's so crazy how I'm a completely different person now. Like, I don't suffer from sex and love addiction anymore. Mm-hmm. And I find that learning how to love myself and fill that kind of gaping hole in my soul on my own, I'm no longer needing to fill that with other things. I mean, granted, it's still hard. And I feel like, honestly, right now, I think food is kind of like the new thing that I'm like taking a look at of like my issues there and maybe kind of addictive habits with that. But I'm in a healthy relationship. I've had a boyfriend for 2.5 years. We did it on a healthy dating plan, which was like essentially learning how to actually date and get to know a person and be their friend and respect them before you have sex or commit to them.
And did he know about your addiction going into it?
Yeah, and he has similar issues that he was working on, and so it was cool because we were both looking for the same thing and we were both needing to go really slow.
Yeah.
We have similar trauma. Like, it was a match from the get-go of, like, very much connecting on that and kind of being in the same place both in our recovery, too.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's interesting that you said that you feel like you don't have it anymore, because I was going to ask, because you hear the phrase, like, once an addict, always an addict all the time. And I can personally relate to that a little bit only because, like, I feel like my addictive tendencies show up in different ways, whether it's about intimacy or food or anything. I think it's not just, like, one category.
Yeah,
like, you don't just have eating disorder. You also have, like, those things sprout up in your life because of your addictive personality, I guess. And so for me, whether it's, like, mental illness or my body image issues or my eating disorder or something, it's always something that I like, I'll catch myself thinking about these, like, I'll be like, oh, this reminds me of this time.
Yes.
And you just have to, for me, I have to always like work on it and be aware of it. And I think making a film about it, like, I made a film about mental illness a couple years ago, the one that I was in, and that was a huge wake-up call for me, because I didn't release it for 2 years. I hated it. And the minute I released it and it premiered, this girl wrote to me saying, like, thank you so much for making this. I felt so alone. And I was like, oh, yeah, the same experience that you had. Like, oh, this is why.
Yes.
Like, this is why it's important.
Yeah.
And I think it's the best kind of therapy, because it's your own. You're not seeking validation from a partner. And it's interesting because I do relate to what you were saying earlier also about, like, how your actions were very much dictated by, like, getting approval from someone, or, like, or whether it was the reason why you were on Twitter or the reason why you you were so upset about, like, leading up to wanting to kill yourself or whatever. It was all, like, the motivation for that was a connection. And learning to have that connection with yourself is so much harder than it sounds, but it's just so worth it. And it's usually starts with being in denial and being like, this is stupid. And like, this is, whether it's like me wanting to do yoga all the time or like whatever, like, it sounds dumb in the beginning, like wanting to meditate. But really, your relationship with yourself is the best one that you can cultivate.
And it's the most important, because what I like to say is that all of your relationships and all of your experiences and your whole world will always be a reflection of your relationship to yourself. Mm-hmm. You cannot control everything outside of you, but you can control what you do with yourself. And so you put that focus on your relationship to yourself, how you're treating yourself, what you think of yourself, the things you're telling yourself, and that will be reflected in all your relationships and experiences.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Since making this movie, have you had, like, an experience, or, like, have you met someone that's, like, oh, like, like you felt really inspired, like it happened because of the movie kind of thing, like whether it was like at a Q&A or something, or like someone commented on your movie and you were like, I don't know, like had like a fangirl moment. Has that happened to you?
Well, it, like, you mean people like recognizing me from the film?
Yeah, or just connecting? or even just like, I don't know, like having like a surreal moment, like I could not have met this person or like gone here without my film, or like it's opened doors for you that weren't there before.
I think, well, definitely just the film and like sharing my story of I've had these really miraculous connections happening. I mean, it's just kind of wild. I'll connect with a person and then they'll share their story. And there was one person in particular that like, he ended up sending me these like rare crystals from Arkansas that like I ended up looking up, and like they're super rare and special. And then they helped me with like my own kind of like therapy, like kind of really miraculous things like that. A lot of that has been happening.
That's really cool.
A lot of that.
That's magical. How can people find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Charstarlene, CharStarlene. You can go to my website, www.charstarlene.com. I actually have a section for sex and love addiction on there where you can see a bunch of resources if you're kind of curious and want to check some things out.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to your next projects. Follow her on Twitter. She's fucking hilarious. What are your Thanksgiving plans? This is probably going to come out after Thanksgiving, but since you have such a huge family, I don't know, like, issues, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Me and my boyfriend are actually just going to our favorite restaurant, Crossroads, which is a vegan restaurant.
Oh, I love that restaurant. They have a great Thanksgiving menu.
That we've never been there for Thanksgiving, so I'm really, really excited about that.
It's good. And you're vegan.
My boyfriend is.
Oh, I'm vegan.
But I try to eat vegan as much as I can.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's it for me and Charlene. Thanks for listening to this new strand of Ethnically Ambiguous. I'm looking forward to doing this some more with really interesting guests like Charlene, and I'm really glad you were here for the first one because your story is one that I think is so important that people can really relate to, especially being a woman and someone that, I don't know, is an other, you know. I don't think, whether it's not seeing yourself, because for me, I never saw myself, not even on TV, but also like in porn. Like it's right. It's like the things that you don't even think about, like being like a forever a weirdo growing up, and then finally like seeing yourself somewhere else, I think is really important to other minorities. So thank you so much for doing what you do, and being honest, I think, is something that I really value in other people. And your honesty is something that is such a big part of your work, and I really admire that. So thank you for doing that. And follow Ethnically Ambiguous on Twitter at Ethnically Amb, A-M-B, and then on Instagram, Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G. And I am Shireen. I'm on Twitter at Shiro. Nope, I'm on Instagram at Shiro Hero, S-H-E-E-R-O, H-E-R-O. And on Twitter, I'm Shireen Y, S-H-E-R-E-E-N-W-H-Y. And, yeah. I don't know. How do we end this? Because usually me and Anna have like a sign off. I have to make up a sign off. Till next time. Follow Charlene. She's amazing. And just be honest.